I'm looking at diesel exposure among pedestrian commuters who cross the U.S.-Mexico border at San Ysidro, California. So just to kind of give you an idea of the structure of this talk, I'm going to give you background, some background on diesel exhaust and chemical markers that have been used and are currently being used for diesel exhaust, and my study methods, and I'll end with some results in the continuation of some of my data analysis I have yet to perform. So diesel exhaust is a major source of fine particulate matter air pollution, and fine particulate matter is classified as having an aerodynamic diameter of 2.5 microns or less, and is, as presented by this picture, it is this small size that makes them highly respirable and able to reach deep into the lung. And it is this disposition into the alveolar region of the lung that poses a significant health risk from fine particulate matter. Now, there have been a lot of studies that have clearly defined the association between fine particulate matter and adverse health effects, including cardiovascular, immunological, and respiratory effects. Some examples of cardiovascular effects include stroke, hypertension, heart attack, and some examples of respiratory effects include COPD and lung cancer. So diesel exhaust is a very complex mixture of hundreds of constituents of both gases and particulates. And there's a lot of constituents that are known to be of toxicological relevance, but some examples include aldehydes, such as formaldehyde, benzene, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, also known as PAHs, and nitro-PAHs. So both human and animal studies have shown that acute exposure to high levels of diesel exhaust cause acute irritation, such as to the eyes, the throat, the bronchioles, neurophysiological effects, such as lightheadedness and nausea, respiratory systems, such as cough and phlegm. So chronic studies in animals have shown both lung and skin cancer, and chronic inhalation animal studies have shown both immunological effects and a range of dose-dependent inflammation and cellular changes in the lung. And the EPA has classified diesel exhaust as a likely human carcinogen by inhalation to environmental exposures. And there have been some epidemiological studies, though not many, that have shown an association between exposure to diesel exhaust and increased rates of lung cancer. So here are some examples of chemical markers that have been used to assess exposure to diesel exhaust include elemental carbon, which is considered the gold standard, 1-hydroxypyrene, and PAH ratios. Now, there are a lot of limitations to these chemical markers, and one of the most well-noted is the fact that there's contribution from non-diesel sources. So, and also variations in analytical methods for quantification, and I refer specifically to elemental carbon when I say that, as this is considered the gold standard. And so these limitations introduce a lot of challenges to doing exposure assessments looking at diesel exhaust. And one of these is the inability to account for spatial and temporal variation, which a specific marker could account for. Another one is being able to assess behavior on exposure. When I talk about behavior, some examples are ventilation rates, as we all have different ventilation rates, and activity increases or decreases ventilation rates. And also the effects of being such as personal protective equipment for occupational studies. So, 1-nitropyrene is a marker that has been recently shown to be very specific to diesel exhaust is 1-nitropyrene, and recent studies have shown this. And 1-nitropyrene is actually nitro-PAH, and nitro-PAHs are very enriched in diesel exhaust in relation to other sources of particulate matter, and so 1-NP, which I'll refer to as from now on. It's very abundant in diesel exhaust, and there's a lack of formation from other non-diesel sources, and also from photochemical reactions. And in addition to these advantages, the applicability and utilization of 1-nitropyrene as a prominent chemical marker is strengthened, and metabolites of 1-nitropyrene can be collected and quantified in urine, and these metabolites are specific to 1-nitropyrene. So the purpose of my dissertation project was to perform a population-based exposure assessment in a community setting using 1-nitropyrene. And this is a community that's highly affected by diesel exhaust exposure. And what I want to point out here is that the proximity of the pedestrian commuters to the diesel exhaust from these idling buses. And this is the border. So the U.S.-Mexico border is encircled in this black circle. And it is, so just to give you kind of an idea of geography, downtown San Diego is located here, so it's about 16 miles south of downtown San Diego. So the U.S.-Mexico border at San Ysidro is the largest and busiest border crossing in the world, with 45,000 pedestrians and 65,000 vehicles crossing on average per day. And the border commute for pedestrians averages around an hour and a half, and with a range of about 30 minutes to 3 hours. And the pedestrian pathway is shown by the red arrow here. Now, when you get into the longer border waits, the pedestrian pathway extends from the red to the yellow, so the line gets pretty long. So with my study population, I have 69 healthy participants that enrolled, and 54 of these were subjects. Now, these subjects lived in Mexico, specifically Tijuana, which I'll refer to as TJ, and they commuted across the border and worked or went to school in South San Diego. And my controls worked and or went to school and lived in South San Diego but did not cross the border. So from each participant, I collected a 24-hour personal PM2.5 and 1MP filter sample, carbon monoxide, temperature and relative humidity, a questionnaire, a 24-hour time activity diary, and a urine sample following their participation in my study. So with this histogram, it shows that, so from the time of enrollment from in my study to 2 weeks prior to enrollment, their average number of border crossings for my subjects was about eight border crossings per 2 weeks. So they commute quite often. And this other histogram here, so during the time of my enrollment, they crossed the border northbound once, wearing the equipment. And so here, this histogram shows that the average wait was 72 minutes with a range of 200 minutes. So this is just to give you an idea of what my participants wore. So they have a backpack here, and their air filter was connected as close as possible to their breathing zone to capture as much potential absorbed inhalation dose as possible. Now, one thing I should note, in addition to collecting these personal samples, I also collected ambient border samples during their estimated time of commute. And these border samples included 1-nitropyrene and real-time data for PM2.5, ultrafine particulates, and carbon monoxide. So I've been able to analyze my personal air filters, and here is a two-dimensional high-performance liquid chromatography with tandem mass spectrometry method. And so my results are going to be in regards to the personal air filters. So here, the results show that you have your subjects. So my subjects have a concentration of 1-nitropyrene of 0.85 picograms per meter cubed, in comparison to the controls, which was 0.15 picograms per meter cubed. So this is a 5.6 significant fold increase of the diesel exhaust exposure amongst my border commuters in comparison to the U.S. residents. And I just want to point out that there's the max concentration for subjects was 12.83 in comparison to the controls, which was 0.86. So here's just a table to give you an idea of comparison across other studies that have used 1-nitropyrene. So Seattle, this is also a personal 24-hour sample of school-aged children, and these levels were 0.2 picograms per meter cubed, And the Healthy Borders, which is my my study participants had, this is combining both subjects and controls now. So it's 0.5. So there's about a, you have about a 3.2-fold increase of exposure between my dissertation step participants and the Seattle school-age children. Now, this number for Seattle school-age children is meant to represent a typical background exposure to 1-nitropyrene. Now, it's going to vary. This background exposure is going to vary depending on geographic location, but this is what it would be for Seattle. Now, the Seattle Duwamish, this number is actually an annual average. So this was taken, a 1-NP sample was taken every 6 days for 1 year. And it's, Duwamish is a pretty polluted place. It's a Superfund site. And so you have a lot of on-road and off-road sources of diesel exhaust. And so you have about a 3.2 increase difference of exposure. Now, Shenyang is a pretty polluted city, and so these are taxi drivers that, so 1-NP was collected from taxi drivers during their one work shift. So one work shift averaged between 8 hours to 12 hours. And these 1-NP samples were placed inside their vehicles. And as you can see, there's a very high level of 1-nitropyrene in comparison to my study. So I looked at seasonal variation of 1-nitropyrene. So as you can see here, this box plot on the right shows that there's about a 4.5 increase of 1-nitropyrene concentration in the heating season versus the non-heating season. So the heating season's referred to as October 1st through February 28th, so the winter months. And here is a box plot of PM2.5. And so PM2.5 is actually gravimetric analysis from 1-nitropyrene. So there's also a significant difference of increased concentrations in the heating versus non-heating season. So some reasons for this potential increase of 1-nitropyrene concentration in the winter months is that there's less atmospheric mixing, so potentially less dilution, so less 1-nitropyrene in the air. Also, the atmospheric half-life of 1-nitropyrene could be shorter. And this makes sense because one of the major degradation pathways of 1-nitropyrene is photodegradation. And also, there could be greater diesel exhaust emission in the winter versus the summer, which doesn't seem to really make sense unless you live in Minnesota and use, like, snowblowers to clear out your driveway. But so then I looked at the ratio of 1-NP to PM2.5. And there's also to account for the large variability of PM2.5. And as you can see, there's still a significant increase of 1-NP in PM2.5 in the winter months versus the summer months. Now, my data, I can't further look into this data analysis to kind of distinguish whether it's half-life or whether it's less atmospheric mixing to account for what contributes to this higher concentration of 1-NP in winter versus summer. So I just wanted to look at the association between the personal PM2.5 and the 1-NP and 1-NP. And the scatter plot on the right shows that there's a lot of variability of 1-NP in as a fraction of PM2.5. And here, when you log both variables, you're able to account for about 40% of the variability of 1-NP could be accounted for by or log of 1-NP can be accounted for by log of PM2.5. So just some conclusions. There is a significant increase of exposure between the border commuters versus the U.S. residents, as was shown. And also there's a significant increase of 1-nitropyrene and PM2.5 in the winter versus the summer months. And the variable association being there's a very variable association between PM2.5 and 1-nitropyrene. So I just wanted to talk about some continuing work that I'm going to do. I'm currently doing some regression modeling, looking at determinants of exposure, and also to looking at contribution of microenvironments to exposure using my questionnaire and my time activity diary information, and also collected indoor and outdoor samples from my subjects and controls from a subset of them. And so with this, in addition to the border 1-NP concentrations, I'm going to do some exposure modeling And then also we'll have to analyze my urine. And one thing to point out with the Shenyang study, they also collected urine samples, and they showed that with increasing 1MP concentrations in the air, there was an increase of urinary concentrations of these metabolites specific to 1-hydropyrene. So we'll see what my data has to show. But I just wanted to give some thanks, particularly to my dissertation committee and some UW personal staff that helped train me with this, with the data, or with the data analysis, and also Casa Familiar, who is a community partner in San Ysidro, who helps recruit subjects, and they're very vital with that. And also the San Diego Prevention Research Center, which helped with a lot of the funding, and the U.S. Customs Border Protection Agency, which gave us permission to have access to the border, which was not very easy, it turns out, and the University of Washington and San Diego State Laboratory Facilities.
Thank you.